Troy Galloway is a construction manager and consultant, commercial and residential builder, and a certified inspector for all commercial and residential buildings. And now, here is About the House with Troy Galloway.
Well, folks, welcome back to About the House. I'm so tickled that you all got to join us today. We have a fabulous show. You're going to really love this one. I've been trying to get this particular show. Now, you know I say that a lot, but this was somebody I've been trying to get for a long time. And what we actually got this time was somebody that is the cream of the crop, not just one of the regulars out there. So I'm very blessed. Hey, let me introduce a little bit about myself. My name is Troy Galloway. I am your humble host, About the House. Actually, I own Galloway Building Services. And a little bit about my company is that we do construction expert witnessing. We do commercial building inspections. We do some building inspections. I also teach at the college building science classes. And I just finished a fabulous book, which I'm showing off right there. And it's the essential guide to hiring contractors. But that's not what this show is about. We got a lot of other videos on that, but I just put it out there because it just come out of out of printing. So we're pretty tickled about that too. But anyway, let's get on to the show because I'm kind of bragging about this one too. We got today, you know, out here in the real world, we got decorators, we got all kinds of designers, but we got a professional. Make sure I get this right, interior designer, because I got in trouble earlier today for saying the wrong thing. So, hey, let me introduce Jeannie. Jeannie, tell everybody a little bit about you, how you came about doing what you're doing, and just educate us, because I bet none of us know the difference between decorator and designer.
So my name is Jeannie Lashmet, and my company is JML Interior Design. And actually, right now, our office is located at the KDR Design Center, which is the design center for interior design here in St. Louis for getting resources and things like that. It's a big showroom, and our office is there. And when I say that I'm there now, I have been at some other different places in St. Louis, but we've currently been there since 2019. So I started interior design actually stepping out in the world and practicing interior design in 1990. And when I was younger, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do in my life and, you know, what was I going to do? When I grew up, and I really liked drawing. I liked art. I liked, you know, constructing, building things, had a very elaborate dollhouse I made with wiring. My brother, who is an electrical engineer, helped me wire it and all that kind of cool stuff. So that was when I was very young. And then as I progressed into, when I was starting to get older, I realized that I needed to do something, you know, that a field that would not be an artist or would not be a person that did sculpture. So what could I do that would make money? So I had gotten into drawing. I loved drawing in general and sketching and things like that. And I had been with a friend of mine, and we had sat in front of our houses and we had started drawing our houses in elevation, and I just couldn't get it right. So I went to talk to my dad, he's a civil engineer. And I'm like, I just can't understand this. And he said, well, you're not drawing it in perspective. And I'm like, what is that? And he said, well, you're drawing this all flat. He said, the world is not flat. Do not draw it like it is. So he helped me set it up with vanishing points and things like that and getting everything in true 3D. And I was like, this is what I want to do. I have found my calling in life. I want to draw in 3D. So I really thought I would like to be an architectural delineator, which is where you actually draw the interiors and designs and things like that in 3D. And that way you can present your designs and concepts to your clients. So that's how I really got into interior design. I was studying, researching and doing, you know, finding out the different types of design and how I could get into it. So that's how I really morphed into becoming an interior designer.
Oh, well, so you sounds like you've been doing it for quite a while, several years under your belt if you started in the 90s. Mm-hmm. But what's this? I see I got a note here, licensed. I didn't even know you had to be licensed. Is that a state requirement or a federal requirement, or is that just something to, so you can, you know, is that a mantle? Like, you know, an engineer, he doesn't necessarily have to, he's an engineer, but, you know, what is that? Is that state-oriented or?
Well, when you become an interior designer, when you graduate or whatever, and you start your way in the world, you actually can progress in education and you can elevate yourself. And one of the things that you can do is study for the NCIDQ exam, which is the National Qualification for Interior Design, NCIDQ. I'm not sure if I said it backwards or not. But anyway, it's you take specific tests that are very difficult and actually are necessary to learn the, or to know the codes, building standards, everything like that, public welfare and safety. And so, like I said, there are three tests, and once you pass the three tests, you become NCIDQ certified, which means that it's, you know, just a lot of education. You know that you've passed these tests and know all of these different types of design. And so from there, you can actually become licensed. But you don't have to be in most of the states to practice interior design. I believe Florida, you have to, and there are a couple other states, but I'm not sure. But I actually lived in Springfield, Illinois for a while. And
You know what college, you know the college, when I said that, do you remember my college?
That's how exactly. Come so I'm like, there's some kind of a connection there. But in Illinois, you do not have to have the license to practice in or to call yourself, to call yourself an interior designer, but you do not have to have a license to practice. Mm. You can practice without the license. So after you take the NCIDQ exam, you have to fill out a lot of extensive paperwork. And then you have to submit that to the state of Illinois. And then they actually will review it. And then they will decide if they want to approve you to become a licensed interior designer. So there's lots of reasons. It's your schooling. It's your, you know, completion of education. Classes and things like that after that, that really get you to that level that you want to be at. So there's a huge difference between that and you know, decorators that don't have to even go to school.
So I got in trouble earlier, which you educated me. So that's awesome, because I was saying interior decorator, but you're a designer. Tell the difference between a decorator and designer, so we all know, because sometimes we pay the price for a designer when we only got a decorator.
Sure. Okay. So let's talk about this. So you've got, you're like, well, what do I do? I'm a client. I want to hire someone to do my my home project or my commercial project, whatever it might be. So the first difference between the interior designer and the decorator is, like I said, it's the education. I have a 4-year degree. You can actually also get a 2-year associate's degree and then take additional when you work at a specific company, you have a certain amount of hours that you put that you work for that company, and that can add on to
like an internship.
Right, but they get paid. So, you know, your real job, and then if you put in the 2 years of that, then you can you can elevate your name your level. So what the designers do is that we focus really on the architectural drawings. We're not architects, but we work a lot on the floor plans, elevation sections. We're taught to understand all of those different views and detail drawings and things like that. We understand the construction process, which is where we work again with the contractors and the architects and the process that it takes to do the design from a schematic or a concept all the way to completion. We specify furniture. We call it FFE, furniture, fixtures, and equipment. So especially in like the commercial realm, when you're having to specify furniture, and you have to know the specific weight load that chair can take and the durability of the product and things like that. So you have to have that kind of knowledge to specify those kinds of products. We understand the environmental impact, and sustainability is really big right now. And there's a whole breadth of products that you have to be conscious of that are, you know, bad for the mm-hmm. environment and the people that are living in those environments.
What I found years ago, because we did a lot of custom homes, I found that, which I really, you know, I'm not allergic to nothing. I'm very blessed. I'm not, but some people was allergic to formaldehyde, and we didn't know. It was hard for us to figure out because we're builders. You know, we know how to do it, but we don't know what's what. And just finding formaldehyde-free products or these kind of different products for, and that'd be perfect for. I mean, what you know, people could get a hold. Builders need to reach out to you, especially custom builders, so they could help.
Right.
You could probably, well, you probably do. Do you join and help other builders, big builders here in town or custom people?
Yes, we do work with other builders when we're brought to the table with the, you know, by a customer, things like that. They'll be like, well, here's the project that we're going to do, and this is the builder that you're going to work with, you know, or contractors or whomever. So we partner up with most all of our projects.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, that's great. So got a little bit about your, tell us a little more, go to your slideshow here.
Oh, sure. And, okay.
Because we really want to show people, you got so much great information. I don't know if we're going, we might have to do two shows.
I'll go through a little bit more quickly.
No, you're fine. You're beautiful. Go ahead.
So some other things we have to worry about are also just handicapped and building codes, mm-hmm. where things like, you don't really realize it, but with a ramp for someone to get from the inside to the outside of a building and the length of the ramp for the wheelchair, there's a specific amount that that you can go up per inch versus per foot. Mm-hmm. And so it's really important to know that span, so because a wheelchair can't go up too high too quickly. Mm-hmm. And so things like that. And then also we work with color. And I think, as you know, there are a lot of different sciences behind color and how it affects how people feel, and getting the right color combinations and not making it so that, you know, things make people angry and what have you. So we really focus on picking the correct colors for people. So the decorators, there's usually no formal education. They are more design their design focus is more like the furnishings, the picking out the colors, the texture, what kinds of textiles and fabrics and things that they might like for the clients to have, and then also accessories. And with a designer, we do help people with those things as well, but that's really not our primary focus. Mm-hmm. And so basically just talking about the differences that, unlike an interior designer who focuses on the presentation, the interior designers are trained and things like that. So that's the big difference there.
I can see that being a big difference because just a real quick story, and I'm not going to say her last name, but Linda something here at, out of St. Louis, and if she's watching this show, you're going to remember it because you did. This makes the difference between quality and somebody that thinks they know what they're doing. So we put ceiling tile, or wall tile. I think I talked to you about this, and then the bathroom, and it was for an aquatic bathroom because it was off a shower house, and so they put little fish inside of their tile. But she said, "I don't like all the fish going the same way. I want you to send the other fish going the same way." Well, they're on tile; they're pre-printed. So when we put them the other direction, they looked like they was dead fish because they was upside down.
she didn't think about that.
No, yeah. And see, that's why I think, and that's what gives a lot of people, the wrong impression of the quality of what they, you know, and your services, because less than quality are trying to portray themselves to be a designer when they're not.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because you would need to know, you know.
Like, you got to have enough common sense to see if a fish looks upside down, it's dead.
Yeah, definitely. So we do things like that in advance and make sure that tile works. So,
yeah.
So basically, what do interior designers do? I just made a quick slide of this. And just some interesting things. A lot of the working, you know, alongside the contractors and the architects. It's kind of interesting because I did do a quote here from Eclectic Home from Penny Francis. And basically she says, "I always say 10% is design and 90% is the execution of the design." So there's in the interior design industry, there's not a whole lot of fun, picking this out, picking that out. It's a lot of work to even make the selections, to have to know what you're doing to make the proper selections. Everything that you do that's design, like all picking out all the cool things, okay, great, you did that. But then how are you going to execute that, or all the details that go into that to making sure that the tile is not backwards.
Yeah.
I mean, everything, all the specifications. So in the end, a lot of it is project management. It's putting together budgets, proposals. I mean, it's just at the end of the day in your design world, you're like, oh, okay, I didn't even do any design that day, or it's much more minimal than people think. Mm-hmm. So I actually put together the 10 common mistakes when hiring an interior designer that the customers do. And this is something that we need to be aware of because it's expectations of working with an interior designer. So this is a big mistake. When clients don't have a realistic budget, I'm going to bring this closer. I mean, it's a big mistake. Because a client will have an imaginary number in their head, like they want to do this home remodel, but they're thinking that it's only going to cost $20,000. And you're like, that's not right. You know what I mean? And you don't understand everything that goes into the process and all the things you're going to have to buy and all this construction. And as you know, with COVID, everything's construction has gone up so significantly.
Oh, it went crazy.
And they don't really realize, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Well, we talk about that in my book, too. When you hire a contractor, to fully see the picture as much as you possibly can and then get budgets for all of that. So as that, when you do get into it, because that happens as a builder, too. Yeah, we see this all the time. They get this and they start adding to. And next thing you know, the add-ons are more than what the initial job was.
Oh, I know. It gets crazy like that. And something that I do tell clients, like this is with buying products, like when they want to buy their appliances and things and they have this budget of like, oh, I only want to spend $10,000 for all these pieces. And so you can go through and you can pick the refrigerator that costs $3,000 and you can pick, you know, all the different pieces that when they tally up, they're about $10,000. And then I'm like, do you not know? Don't forget about your tax, 10%. And they're like, oh no, you know, there goes another chunk of their money. And it's just these little things that people don't think about.
Good point.
And so there's just a lot of things that people need to realize that when they come to talk to the interior designer, and the interior designer says, you know, I really imagine, or I think more like an $80,000 project versus a $50,000. And when they look at you like they're dumbfounded, and how come you can't do it for that price? Like, why can't you do it? And I'm like, it's not me, it's everything you want. So we have to scale back your scope it's not gonna happen. And that happens a lot. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they will just come up with more money, so.
Yeah, and that's fine if they want to come up, but just don't whine about it.
Right, right, you know,
Be happy about it, but be educated. Most people, as long as I think as their heads up on it,
right,
then they're more open-minded if it has to go over budget. They understand. What they don't understand is the contractors out there, you know, their designers or decorators or builders, they don't tell them what's heads up. Don't educate them. And next thing you know, they get this change orders, you know, and they're just blowing up.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next thing you know, then you're in court.
Oh, yeah. That can be a big problem.
And I get called as doing expert witnessing. I get called all the time for just that kind of stuff. How come? They ripped me off. No, mm-hmm. They didn't rip you off. You just didn't. You changed your, you know, look at your contract.
Well, and two, if the contractors give them allowances and tell them that they can have a light fixture in their kitchen for $300, you know, a chandelier, well, that's fine. But if they want something different, then that's because they want something different. So if it's mm-hmm. $600 versus $300, they're just going to have, you know, that's a choice. So you have mm-hmm. to pay more.
Yeah.
So things like that, that they're like, oh, no, I got, like you said, I got ripped off. And you're like, no, you didn't. You just went outside of the allowance. So mm-hmm. So that's always a challenge. I mean, it is. And so there's a lot of information on this slide. But the big deal that's really important that I feel with this slide is interviewing contractors for a remodel without having a construction plan. So a lot of times the client will not start with an interior designer. They will go to the contractor and they will actually expect them, a contractor, to come on site and give them, look around, all these things are going to do. And then they think that the contractor can actually figure out a price, you know, based upon these things that you have orally discussed with the contractor. Nothing is written at all. And so, we're talking about the contractor asking him to travel to the project and meet with you for an hour or whatever, and then giving, you know, the information. And then also the interior designer doesn't even know that these thoughts are going on. So when you come to meet with the designer, then there are all kinds of questions and concerns. And so the big thing that we need to take note in is that there really needs to be a plan before you should even talk to a contractor. And that's where you go to your designer first, and then you get all the information. You get the scope of work. You put all the layouts, the floor plans, all the materials that are going to be selected, that kind of thing. And then the contractor now has something to work off of versus literally things that are, you know, the client tells them orally or whatever. That's just throwing, you know, all kinds of problems that their way. So we always want the clients to work with their work, get a set of plans, work with it, and then therefore you don't, the communication process will go much smoother.
So that would work great for, well, like we did one here, and you folks can look it up on electrical. He's a lighting engineer, and you can check out. I won't go to that too much right there because this is your show. But anyway, he's out of Colorado, and he works for people all around the country because that sounds like it perfect for you because you could do a lot of the research and a lot of the work and everything and present that so as that they could have something to work with because you're the builder. And it's really frustrating as a builder if you don't have a, they don't have a plan. Now, what I used to do as a builder, I would say, okay, this is where we're at. We need to bring it, you know, because then I understand my client well enough to say, listen, we need to bring in a designer on this because, you know, like I told you, I'm a little colorblind. You sure don't want me doing that, you know, because I don't know. I have an idea, but you don't want to pay for an idea. You want knowledge.
Right.
As a customer, you know, that you want you. So that's, I think that's fabulous. And to work together like that and where you could help people here in where you're at and anywhere.
Oh, sure. Now, I have a client right now that we're in this situation because they hired me before they, I'm sorry, they hired the contractor before they hired me. And so there was a lot of information that I guess was discussed between the two of them. And when I met with them, and it's a really neat project, and they're doing a renovation on the first level of a home in the Benton Park area. So it's real cool. And they gutted the first floor and they're remodeling that. And so when I first met with the client, I asked him, do you have a budget in mind? And he said, well, you know, we have $85,000. And I said, $85,000? I don't know about that. I said, I don't think that's quite enough to cover this. And he said, well, we talked to our contractor, and that's what he told us it would cost. And I said, oh, okay. But yet that was supposed to include the cost of the kitchen, the cost of the countertops, which it's when it's the counter, the quartz countertop, I mean, that's incredibly expensive. That's like $5,000 and $6,000.
But they're great though, folks. Mm-hmm. They're great.
Oh, yeah.
I love them.
Oh yeah, yeah. But all these things that are really cool, a lot of times the contractor puts these, they are not realistic. And then the client has to really.
I want to throw out a disclaimer here for contractors. You contractors, and I know, hey, hit like and comments on this when you see this, because I know you're going to complain, because some of you guys are going to whine, but you do it on purpose. You do it on purpose. You get out there, you get ahead, and that way you can throw in all the extra change so you could raise up and make more money, and you make all this extra money on change order when you're actually taking advantage of your client because you're not getting all this stuff taken care of at ahead. They know it. If they're a quality contractor, if they don't know it, then you don't want them.
Right.
You
right.
know, but beware, you know, and that, mm-hmm. and you probably work with general contractors that you know how to do mm-hmm. the system, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
So that's awesome. And you probably, now, what if, hypothetical, and say it's a, you're in St. Louis area, but say, you know, you go to Springfield, Illinois, and you can't run up there all the time. Can you interview the contractors before you actually recommend them, or do you just say, let's try to work together? How does that, may I use the word marriage of the two? Because you temporarily are working together for a common goal, which is kind of what marriage is about here. So do you interview? Are you two work together? How can that work if I'm an out-of-stater?
Well,
because this show goes everywhere. So that's why I'm trying to advertise all the time or everywhere.
If it's a client within a certain radius, like let's say it's a 2-hour radius, then I would go to that town, like in Springfield, and look for the contractors or the best contractors that are your good fits for the company, and actually meet with them and say, hey, you know, these are the kinds of projects that I'm looking for assistance with. Do you do these kinds of projects? And then we talk about what they do, are they capable of it, some pictures of what they've done, things like that. And then I could figure out which contractor I think would be a good fit for myself because it is a lot of, you know, it's a long distance communication. So there or a lot of times the client will have their contractor already, and I work long distance with that contractor.
You know, you taught me something just now, because we actually have a construction consumer advocacy. And what we're doing is we're taking the quality contractors and we're interviewing them and such. And so people from out of state or other areas can look it up and do some chat research. One of the questions are, whether it does make them good or bad, but have you ever worked with an interior decorator, an interior designer? Have you ever done these things? Because if the contractor hasn't, then it's not a problem. He hasn't. At least then he could check the box. But if he has, he can also check the box, and that would enhance his ability, you know, for everybody working together. Because not all jobs need a decorator or a designer, which I don't know too many bigger jobs that don't. I mean, even kitchens, any small bathrooms, you know, all that needs, you know, unless you're building an outhouse. Then you just got to, well, be quiet about
that.
What
if they wanted it to be a man cave outhouse? Who knows what they want it to be?
Well, I've been married long enough to know that we tease about that. We actually get in trouble on purpose just hanging out in the and the doghouse. So we need somebody to help us design that doghouse. So,
hey, I've done custom design doghouses.
Are you really?
With barn doors. And
oh, how cool.
All kinds of cool stuff. Oh. I should have put a picture in here.
Well, and I got way ahead. So you got a mistake too. So I jumped out ahead.
Sorry that's for okay. That. So the next mistake is not reading the contract through. And this is really, really important. A contract is a legal document. It's legally binding. And so what it says is what you do. And like, I will call out my scope of work very detailed and say, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. And this is everything we're going to do. This is a list of, like in the kitchen, all the things that we are going to do for you. And that's it. So a lot of times the client needs to thoroughly read the contract. And I go over it with them at the time. But I have had clients that have taken their contracts actually to the lawyers and had them review it. And that's fine too. But once they sign the contract, that's the contract. And I will talk about a little bit of what we call project creep, which is when the clients add on. They like sneak add on, but they think they're like, well, can I get with this bathroom? Can you also do the hallway outside the bathroom? And if you do that, can we pick some new paint for the hallway? And you're like, okay, you want to be kind, but then it gets to the point where you've now taken on a lot more work. Mm-hmm. And then you're in a situation because you can't back it up and say, I've already got myself into it. So now I can't say, I'm not going to do this, you know.
What I always did, and I recommend too for contractors out there, and probably for you too, is that every time I ever would give a freebie, which is it's a freebie if it wasn't in a contract, I would give you a change order. Mm-hmm. Tell you how much that would cost, and then if I wasn't charging anything, I would pay no charge. So as it, you see the value of what you're getting,
because
would not appreciate. Nobody appreciates it because they don't know what to appreciate.
Right.
You know, I mean, so it took another 2 or 3 hours of your time. Well, you know, that's
yeah.
I mean, that's money lost for you. Mm-hmm. But if you're willing to help, they need to know how much them 2 or 3 hours are.
Right. Right. And we also do those, like you said, change orders where we will revise the contract and put more information on it, because then you're to the point where you're like, wait a minute, these things you want me to do, I will do them. But I know it's going to take more time than, you know, but then we're thinking or whatever. So mm-hmm. let's make sure and fix it.
Awesome.
Modify it. So, yeah, so that's important.
Oh, and also, too, I just want to throw a cheap plug in for us on our radio show. Several years ago, we had Matt Nagel, an attorney, coming on, and he talks about contracts. So go check out that radio show podcast and learn more about that. So I'll just shut up and go from there, because I'm not an attorney. Don't play one on TV, and I'm not about to get in trouble.
Okay. Well, that's fine with me. So, this is really important. Mistake number four, choosing price over quality.
Yeah, boy, please share that.
Yeah, this is a big problem. First of all, hiring a contractor. Don't hire the cheapest contractor because you really need to weigh in what they're going to do, their quality. And what contractor is saying, what they're going to do. And then you need to review those and then say, okay, this is just wrong. How are you going to do this for $50,000 when the other contractor is going to do it for $75,000? And there's a little bit of weirdness going on here. And why is that? Mm-hmm. And then you've got some contractors that are just like, they just want to get the business and they'll throw a low number out there and things like that.
Kind of like what we talked about earlier, just a few minutes ago. They do it on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah, and they just, and then the quality is really, you know, lacking, and they don't have good subs under them or whatever, and there's not a lot of supervision, and so the quality of the work really suffers as well because you're paying less and they're paying less, you know.
Now, one hand, that's great to get that done, but another hand, for me, I get most of my construction litigation work from these poor contractors ripping people off, and I'm getting too old to keep up with all the work. Yeah. So listen to what she's saying and find out why.
Oh, yeah.
Just ask. And if it sounds silly, then it's probably silly, you know?
It probably is. And so that's basically, you know, what really important is that, and it's also with your products. Don't go out there and buy, like, when we recommend a really nice quartz top product or cabinetry, and we're like, this is a really good product, really, and we go over the reasons why. And then the homeowner goes to Home Depot and they buy some, their countertops, which are not the same, and then their cabinetry, which is the quality, is just not the same because it's just all different. So then I find out that, oh, you didn't do what I suggested, but you went to the, you know, a store like that, and now I have to work with that, which is frustrating.
Very extremely.
But I mean, we'll do it, but we're like, okay.
Well, people need to know, and then we're educating that in the construction consumer advocacy, because say for instance, Husqvarna saws, I didn't know that, chainsaws, for the you guys out there and gals that understand, do cutting. I thought you'd get the Husqvarna from Lowe's, which that's the same Husqvarna you get at the Husqvarna shop. No. It's a lesser grade. They just stick that name onto it because they buy it by. But the consumers don't know that.
They do not. And it's very frustrating because I had a client that all they needed was a shower head. And we talked about getting a shower head. And then they went to, I think it was Home Depot, and they said, hey, I got this shower head. I said, well, let me see it. And he said, it's a Kohler shower head. And I said, no, that's not the same. They do not put the same interior, you know, the mechanisms and things in that than they would one that you would purchase through a Kohler resource. Mm-hmm. So it's not good.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and that's why they need somebody like you to go to, because honestly, our builders, they know, but they don't have time to fool with it. That's
right.
Not their forte.
Right.
That's yours,
care.
And you are the go-to person.
Right. Right. We can definitely steer them straight before they go really wrong. So the next mistake is, not following through on the designer's advice or putting too many cooks spoil the kitchen. I'm sorry, the soup. And that's a big problem. When you, as a client, you hire me. You're the client. You hire me as your designer. You and your 10 friends have not hired me. I am not working for your 10 friends. I'm working for just you. Mm-hmm. So when the clients get out there and they have all their family, friends, neighbors giving their own opinion, this can be just a huge debacle because it's very irritating. I do feel very disrespected because I'm like, wait a minute, I'm telling you all these good things to do. And then you're going and you're listening to your friends and your friends are saying, well, this is a better idea. And then you're like, well, why did you even hire me in the first place? And I do have a very scary story that goes
please.
With that.
Yeah. Whenever you get a chance to share that now or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, please.
Okay.
People need to know.
They do. And I'm going to tell this one right now just because I think it's really interesting and fitting for this category. So I took on a client who called me and they said that they were having a really hard time. They needed their kitchen done, whole kitchen plan. And then also part of the living room. So I was out of town too. And she was like, can you help me? And I said, I believe I could. We have to set up an interview. And so she said, okay, well, you have to understand, I've worked with almost every designer, so many designers, and they've all fired me. And I've worked with all these showrooms, and I'm not even allowed back in them. Because she said her big problem was she was trying to get this flooring selected so that she could do her kitchen. So I said, okay, well, let's meet, and we'll talk about this. So I met with her, explained our process, because we would do the kitchen design, we would do all the selections and specifications. And she said that would be great. But then she said the first thing she wanted to do was get this kitchen flooring selected. So we started out at the showrooms, and basically it was true. She had been to all the showrooms before, and they all knew her, and they all knew of her, and they all knew that she was very challenging. And I come to find out that through one of the showrooms, they said, I met her 6 years ago. Is she still working on that kitchen floor? And I said, well, yes, I guess so. And then they were like, okay, she has looked at every single thing there is. I don't know what else to tell you. So I still would find a few things at these stores and would go to the next store. And they would be like, oh my gosh, I started working with her 3 years ago. Is she still working on this project? I'm like, okay, I guess so. So I would continue to get the samples together for her. And we would actually go to the showrooms. And once every single sample had an issue, every single one. So I had still done a lot of design work in the meantime and whatever, and we still hadn't had that floor figured out. So I said, we have got to make a decision on this floor. We have got to. And so she called one of the stores, and she actually had them set aside 12 samples of flooring. And I'm like, oh, gosh. So we go to the flooring showroom, and while we're there and she's picking through all the flooring that's not going to work out, she's calling another company and setting up a time for them to come out and bring more samples to her. And then, by the way, can I come tomorrow to look at those samples? So I'm like, okay. So then I did that. And then she's very upset because she couldn't get the flooring figured out. So I said, okay, we are going to get this done Monday and Tuesday of this coming weekend. You have to have this done. So I did. I spent 2 days with her going to flooring showrooms and back. And so finally, on this, I was really getting nervous on the first day because I was starting to really get stressed about this. And I don't get stressed. I really, you know, stay calm. But this was giving me anxiety. Second day, we spent all kinds of time. And then we actually started to look at some of the counters and put them with some of the concepts for the flooring. And at that point, she was really making me nervous because I just could feel that there weren't going to be any decisions made. I was just like, I'm done with this. So we got to the parking lot and she said, well, I'm so excited. I feel like I can just, you know, work with you 2 days a week till this project gets done making selections. We can have this all done. And I was like, I can't work with you 2 days a week. I don't have that kind of time. So I felt very bad, but I was like, I have to fire her. I've got to fire this client. So I did. And then come to find out that one of the people in my networking group sent me a referral about a month later.
Oh, no.
And said, here's a kitchen referral. And this is their name. And I went, oh, my God, I about had anxiety, a terrible, you know, anxiety attack. And I called them and I said, please, are you working with her right now? And he said, no, we're just making selections. And I said, no, this is a bad idea. Do not. You will be so stressed. This will go nowhere. You just need to not work with this client. I said, did she get you to go to your home? And he goes, no, she did, but I'm not going there. She can come to me. And so he said he made suggestions for her. And he said, I told her to go home and do homework and look at the kitchen floors and give me some feedback as to what she liked. And I've not heard anything since. So I'm sure it's still not happened. And this started in July of last year. Yeah.
Some people are just so scared of making the decision that they'll make the decision of not making one, which actually, if she would have done this and was able to make a decision when she first started, she probably would have been like 25-30% less cost.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And to not make
a
decision.
So she hurt herself.
To decide. Oh, yeah. And she totally admits it. And she's very clear on the fact that she knows she's, I told her many times, and you are your own worst enemy. I mean, literally, I told that to her face, and she's like, I know, and, you know, things like that. I mean, just bluntly, but in a kind way, so she could understand what the problems were. Mm-hmm. So anyway, like I said,
That's a great lesson, and that's a great story.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That is,
yeah.
That's a well, great story.
The way you learn lessons, though.
Yeah.
you know, just talk it up in more experience, though.
That's
right.
That's right. That way, when you get old like me, you'll remember all that stuff, hopefully.
Oh, sure.
And pass it on to the other people that won't pay no attention to you either.
Oh, no, I know. Yeah, lesson learned for them. So the next big mistake, as you probably know this very clearly, is not getting the building permit and refusing for them to even refuse getting a building permit, even when they know that they should and you know that they're going to start the construction and the importance of it. And as we know, when you do a renovation and you have to get a permit, they tape it on the window mm-hmm. so that you know the house is under construction. So this is just an interesting quick thing about a commercial project. It's not mine, but on the road near our house, there is a building that was being built by, I believe, a family. It looked like a house, and they worked on it for, I would say, 3 years, slowly, slowly, slowly. So finally, we see the sign that says it's a restaurant. It says opening soon, Cafe Dang Yang or whatever. And we were like, oh, cool, it's going to be a Thai restaurant. And this is so neat. We're going to have something in our neighborhood. So we wait and we wait. And finally, the sign comes down that says coming soon. And nothing goes on. And then there's like the building is empty, except people are still, the owners are still going in there. So I'm like, what is going on? So I talked to someone who knows what's going on there. And he said, oh, yeah, they did the whole project and they didn't have a building permit. So now they can't open the restaurant because they can't get an inspection and they will never be able to open the restaurant. And so I was driving past there a few weeks ago and I noticed there's a big padlock on the door, you know, so obviously it's going to be for sale. They're a real, you know, a padlock for a realtor. So I was just like, because they'll never be able to open. They're going to be told they have to cut into everything, show your electrical, show your plumbing, show everything. And then that would just be, you know, probably hundreds and thousands of dollars worth of work.
That's sad.
So that is sad.
Yeah. And also, too, for contractors, too, their client, I'll tell a story that we did years ago on just on a simple deck. And the guy said, I do not want to get a permit on this. And I even had him put it into contract. He did not want to put a permit because he didn't want the county to assess his, you know, and charge him more for his taxes, which, okay, that's your business. You put it into contract. I did it. Well, just to come to at the very end, he said, well, I'm not going to pay you because we didn't get a permit. I said, what do you mean you're not going to pay me? Because you said you had this in writing. Well, I didn't understand what I was writing. And I lost all that money. So contractors, don't do it. Mm-hmm. If they don't want to do it right, anybody that wants to half-ass do it, that's what you're going to get, a half-ass job.
And in the end, it does fall back on the homeowner as far as it is.
Well, when they get ready to sell it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But they save money because they didn't have to pay anything on the deck. So yeah. But, yeah, that's a great point. And we talk about that in the book, too. You know, how important that is. And,
it's huge.
And any contractor that's willing, like I did, any contractor that's willing to do that shows that he was just a youngin', and I was. It didn't take. It took one spanking, and I learned my lesson.
See, that's the case.
But that took money out of my family's, you know, mouth to do that.
Yeah, it's they don't understand that it does hurt
they
you.
They don't care
very much, you know. So
that's a great point.
This is also a big mistake, is making changes to the plan without consulting with the designer.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, and that's a big, big problem, because a lot of times this happens all the time, where we will do a project with a client and then they don't tell you, you know, things like, oh, well, you know what, we didn't like that bathtub there, so we wanted to move it over there. And you're like, wait a minute. If you're going to do that, you have to move your plumbing. You have to move your sink. You have to do all of these things, you know, just because you think it's a good idea to do something and you don't tell me or let me know. And then I'm in the dark anyway. And if there's construction going on and they just talk to the contractor, but not me, then I'm like, okay, this is going to happen. And I had no idea because you're not letting me know what's going on. And so it can be. The communication is terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, really key, because if it's not good communication, which is challenging on a job.
Yeah. And that why I don't mean to keep throwing it back to the book. We talk about communication and getting that all set up. How are you going to communicate? Who are you going to communicate with? What person on the job? And they need to. I remember years ago we did one and talk about just that very same thing where the contractor, with the electrical contractor that was on my job, that he talked with the owner. He told the owner, we need to put these lights here because they won't work there. But he only said that because that was easiest for him. Mm-hmm. The interior decorator or designer, whatever she was, came in and said, well, you're not going to get the proper lighting here. Oh, yeah, my electrician said so. Well, then it got all done and the lighting was inadequate. And next thing you know, guess whose fault he tried to blame? Not the electrician, but the designer.
Oh, yeah. It comes back.
It was both of their faults. It wasn't the designer's fault at all.
Right. And that's a lot of times they'll do the placement of the lighting when there's no one even around, and the electrician will just kind of work with either the contractor or maybe the homeowner, even suggesting some things. And the homeowner, they don't know, but they'll put them on the spot.
Yeah, and electricians know how to wire it, but they have not a clue about what it's supposed to look like and the decorate, because they've never been involved in the whole design process.
Right. Now, that's something that your lighting designer could really help out with.
Well, and now you too, because you're going to be working with the lighting designer and enhance your abilities to be way out above. And none of these other designers here in this area even know this concept. I work with some of them still, and we're still working off of the same things we learned in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, and we didn't even have LED lighting or bright light, white, blue light spectrum, red light. We just had these old, incandescent bulbs
That's interesting.
You've got to work together. Folks, if there's one thing I want to push in this whole show is communication and put everybody together. And nobody makes a decision on their own without everybody working together. And you can put a time constraint. Say, if I reach out to you, you're going to promise me you get back at, because time is business, money, and 24 hours. So, we all have an agreement. If I kind of reach out to my electrician, I don't want to hear I was busy, I didn't get back with you. You signed in your contract, you get back with any questions my designer asks at 24 hours.
Oh, that's a good point.
You just got to do everything in the world, because even though I love my litigation work, and I make a ton of money doing it, it's so sad. There's no winners.
It is very sad, because when you lose a lot.
And there's no need in it.
A lot.
There's no need in it. But anyway, that's awesome. That's a really great point.
So here's a big one. Unrealistic perception of time.
I love that one right there. I love that. That's so funny.
That's
about right, too.
This is just a big problem because you're the homeowner, you can't dictate the time constraints or the time line, or try and see if things can happen. Before it's not even possible, but you can't try and get them to move up a timeline because of the fact that when you order cabinetry and things like that, and there's an 8-week lead time, no one can change that. And so many of my projects, the client will say, well, I've got a wedding in March. Can I get this done for the wedding? Or I've got, the Christmas vacation or the Christmas party, and then we need the house remodel and the graduation party. Well, we always try to backtrack from that date and say, okay, you want it done in March. We're in whatever month we're in. Okay, here's how long it's going to take to do all these things and, backtrack the time so they can understand all that. And then if it's not possible, then they have to understand and accept the fact that it might be construction. There might be construction over Christmas, or just wait until the new year to do your construction. There are so many things that go into the actual timelines and things like that that people don't even know.
And now we have so much supply chain problems and disruptions, not to pick on the Chinese electrical lighting, but we have seen that if I get this light, when I build new homes, if I get this light and it don't work, I might not see that other supply come back in for another year.
Oh, yeah.
And that's not uncommon.
Oh, yeah.
So they didn't leave them any time, Of course, that's a different animal than, waiting for a holiday or something and trying to push it in. But because that's really a time constraint. But yeah, that's a, folks, you got to, just listen to your designer, listen to your contractor. And if they got a difference of thoughts, ask them why.
Well, we've been doing this a long time. And so when you do the projects, there's so many, the bathroom design, kitchen, there are so many that even though it's every client is different, process and what it's going to take to do it. So we're pretty accurate on how long it's going to take. And if you want, a bathroom remodel in 2 weeks, then I don't think that's possible. And if you go to your contractor and they say it's possible, then fine, let them do it. Will it really happen in that amount of time? Doubt it. But anyway, a client cannot force a completion of a project before it's ready.
And as soon as they do, then just contact on your Facebook, Deal's Gone Bad, and let them know, because that contractor is a liar. Or that decorator was a lion, by giving you false expectations just so they could land a job.
And false expectations are really, really key too.
Yeah.
People can be, misled. The clients can get misled. So
yeah. So that's a great one here. And I love the crybaby. I love that.
That's what customers feel like, I think, when they're in that. But so the other mistake, number 9, making purchases without consulting or informing your interior designer. Okay. I mean, that's a huge problem. Because if you order a specific type of refrigerator and you don't realize that it has to sit out this far from the wall, and then your kitchen cabinets are going to be, set in a certain way, but it's not going to match up. Or so much fun when people select a refrigerator that is not counter depth, and they don't understand why it sits out 6 inches beyond their countertop.
I've heard that several times over the years, lots of times, just that very thing. Yeah, right.
Yeah, or I mean, and there's just like they might pick out a washer and a dryer, but then they don't realize, well, they don't even have room in the niche to put the washer and the dryer because you didn't think about the fact that you have to, again, have the allowance for the dryer hose and things like that. So then to do that, you would have had to bring the wall out further in the first. So that when you don't tell someone that you do all these add-ons and things, then the designer's like, wait a minute, I got to get my arms around this and I got to figure out what you've done so I can figure out what needs to be done or what didn't happen and things like that. So that's really a big deal.
Back to communication again.
Yeah, it's all communication. And then the last mistake, micromanaging.
Yeah, buddy.
This is a doozy.
Oh, yeah. I got to control my emotions because it is that big.
A lot of times with the clients, what they don't realize is that the more that they linger around a designer, the more complications are made. We know what we're doing. And so for us to go through a process and then for them to say, well, wait a minute. No, I like this, but you didn't do that. And all these things. And you're like, okay, wait a minute. All right, now I have to redo it. But I didn't even get to finish what I was going to do so they could understand how it was going to look, because they get in there in the mix too early. And they're just, it just makes everything confusing. Or just when someone is around you all the time, it's really stressful, because then you just feel like you're set up for failure, because you can't get a chance to do the things that you need to do. And again, people don't understand client it just all goes back to the same thing, which is, again, the communication. And then also letting your designer do what they need to do and trusting that they are doing the job that you want done, that they're your advocate. So they're going to do, what is best for the client. And if the client does have some concerns, just, bring it up, but not 24/7, and, let things go. So there's a lot to be said about that.
Oh, yeah. And whenever they micromanage, you can just automatically know that job is going to have problems.
Yes.
Every single time.
And that adds on so much time to a project. I mean, next thing you know, your project is drug out 3 weeks, 4 weeks, because they wanted to reselect tiles again and again and again, that kind of thing.
They get in emotions, and then their emotions rule their thinking.
It's very emotional. It's a very emotional process. And that's what interior designers do, though, is they stay with their client and get them through these things and make sure that they don't make bad choices. And, we really hang in there with the clients. We don't want them to be alone.
Please
just stay with us and don't go shopping at midnight on wherever. Yeah. Tell us about these great things you want to buy that aren't even attainable because they're, a 15-week out lead time, or they're made in Australia and freight's going to be outrageous or things like that. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. That's a good one. They were all great points.
And so what I want to show you are some things that we do as interior designers. I've got some projects to show you and things like that. But one of the things that we do, that is not decorators and things, they're not going to do this for you. When we actually do our designs through our conceptual process, when we learn about your project and then we lay out the floor plan, we do all the selections, we have this great, plan for you, we will put it into a three-dimensional rendering so that you can see what it's going to look like before it gets constructed. That way everybody's happy, and then if modifications need to be made, then we will do it at that time. So I've got some examples of some renderings that I've done for some other people's projects. This particular client, we wanted to show them some how their new furniture would lay out within the room. They wanted to do some lighting. They wanted to put in a fireplace, furniture arrangement, how the newel post would look at the base of the stairs. There's a soffit that you can see that's above, and it's two different soffit heights. So it's really important to see how this is all going to come together, so that they can understand, I totally get it. I love that, or things like that. Or maybe they want a different light fixture or pendants instead of that. So this particular client, not too much crazy stuff, just really an overall overview. And there would be many, many renderings versus there would be different directions and angles. So they could see what it would look like when they were walking into the house, standing in the bedroom, because the bedroom was right there in the double doors.
Oh, it's come so far from the old days. This is awesome.
Yeah.
This really helps.
We do these all the time. This is a more complicated project. This was actually a jewelry store. And these are three-dimensional top-down floor plans where the client can actually see it in dimension. So that really helps them to get an overview of the jewelry cases and depth and things like that. And this is a rendering of the jewelry store itself. And again, we do different views and what have you, but this is just a view standing in the door and then walking through into all the counters and things. And if you'll notice in that rendering, there's just one little light fixture stuck in there. This is not the final project. This is just concepts. But we actually ended up doing three long chandelier type of beautiful. They look like jewels and was so pretty. But again, from renderings like this, you can see that it wouldn't make much of a statement. And how do you make it bigger and things like that? And then we do a lot of a branding as well. And you can see that in this project, it's just got a white box around it. But that's just for representation that the logo might go there.
Oh, okay.
But not, I mean, this. A lot of this is very conceptual still. This is another client that had a fireplace we do a lot of fireplace refacings. It's very, very popular right now. Homes are 10, 20 years old now, so they want their remodels done. And then again, this client needed some furniture layouts and new flooring, new rugs, things like that. So this isn't like a major remodel for us. It's just, we do all different tiers of projects.
What's so cool, I'm laughing at myself, is because I'm so old that the new houses that I built when I was a young man are being remodeled today.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'll show you something that we've done in that kind of a situation too, which is interesting. And so this is another remodel, and I will actually show you the before and the after of this in a minute. This shows another fireplace remodel where you get a new fireplace, plus they like to build the shelves on either side. Okay, so those are the renderings. This is a project, a residence in Chesterfield that we did years ago, and this I put this together to show you our process. So when we did this project, and people have beautiful homes already, and you're like, why am I changing this? But, you know, they don't want it anymore. So this home had the cast cement fireplace, very, very, very elaborate, but it's probably almost 6 feet tall. And they wanted to redo it so that he could have his television above the fireplace.
Oh,
it's really,
okay.
That's really, really important. So what we do, of course, we do the renderings, and we probably did four different options for them so that she could see all the different looks that you could do for moldings and where the TV would go and things like that. So then they can pick, you know, which one they like the most. So then this is the process where they tore out the, and we work with the contractor on this, tearing out the entire fireplace, but keeping all the molding around it. So, I mean, like I said, it's a beautiful fireplace, but this is the solution. So that's what it looks like now.
That's beautiful, too. Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, yeah. You'd have never guessed.
No, I know. And look at where the TV fits. So they're really happy with that. Here's another view, too.
That's beautiful.
We did all the window treatments on this one. The big thing was the fireplace molding, and then we did some furniture selection as well. So that was a fun one. This and the reason I'm showing these is you can see the different design processes within the project.
Okay.
So this client, these are very simple parts of plans. I just took a snippet. This is a project that it had a kitchen, just a simple galley kitchen. And then this area here is all a porch right now. And then there's just some double doors leading out there. So it's just a kind of, I don't want to say convoluted, but there's not a whole lot of broken up area. It's just a straight run. So what we did was they wanted to have it so that here is your kitchen right where it's going to go. They've added on a huge sunroom and then put a fireplace in there. And then they've actually redid some doors, some French doors there to lead into a study, which is right there.
Uh-huh.
So this whole thing opened up the whole space,
wow.
All of that. Here's a, now again, people have beautiful homes. This is previous, but people have beautiful homes and you're like, why am I doing this? But they just didn't want, this is a real tight area. They wanted it all opened up. They wanted a wall torn out to make the cabinetry go all the way throughout into the sunroom.
Oh, okay.
Just a few more befores I threw in, just so you could kind of see a beautiful cherry cabinetry, but you know, we did something different. So these are just some sketches that we would do showing layouts for the new kitchen, and you can see we're wrapping the cabinetry around to the other side of the wall. We're putting in a big island that would have a big eating area. Again, concepts. So with this one, I was having a very hard time designing it and deciphering it. So I actually ended up building a little model of the whole house to show them how this would come together. So I did some different views to make sense out of everything and how the cabinetry was going to wrap around that corner. Custom island, I made a huge template out of that so we could fit that perfectly within that space. And so here's your new kitchen.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm, with the new countertop.
Oh.
And then, I mean, they still, it's the cherry cabinet still. I mean, they're all new. But they, you know, the cherry cabinet design is beautiful, but it's just, they couldn't work with the existing cabinets because they wanted so much more. So, I mean, it was just a really pretty place in the first place. But then, you know, we did all kinds of things. Okay, this is an interesting project because this particular client, they lived in a beautiful home already. And they had a fire on Christmas Eve and it burnt down their house.
So they
had to find a new house. So I started working with them in the spring. And they moved to a home which I would call contractor gray, which is when the contractors, they don't do any build out or anything like that. It's more like a vanilla, not contractor grade is great. It's not bad, but it's just, there's not a whole lot of refinishing. It's just, you know, your white walls and things like that. And here's just a quick picture of the fireplace. It's kind of blurry, but that's the existing fireplace and some niches with some shelving and things like that. And so the process was we wanted to put a new fireplace in. We put in a new stack stone. I'm sorry. It's a field stone. Wrapped it around the the niches and then lined the back of the niches with a rustic barn wood. And we also wanted to keep the cabins. We did new countertops and we designed a new fireplace. That's all made out of a cement. So we did that.
Awesome. That's really beautiful.
And then that's how that turned out. This is a top view. So it's kind of little. I've got some other pictures, but this is the actual fireplace. Went to the ceiling. You got the niches. We refinished the floor, did the new furniture for them. And in our discussions, we decided it would be great to have a ceiling that was also made of the barn wood with the beams. And these are all decisions that were made like right there on the fly. I just started talking about what it should be like. And I said, well, what if we did this? And he's like, oh, I love it. We love it. So that all just came together very quickly. So I've got a better picture of this. This is the fireplace.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's gorgeous.
It turned out really, really pretty. And then there's a picture of that niche. This is how it looked, and this is what it looked like when we were done. It's the same niche. And then kitchen. We finished off the kitchen, too, with some new backsplash and lighting. And let's see some detail on that. Vent hood. And so these are just a quick couple before and afters I have, which are just a smaller project. This is before, and I showed you that rendering where the client had that fireplace. This is what it looked like.
Uh-huh.
And it has super, super old. So they wanted to like try and save these cabinets. But when I looked at it, I said, this is just a laminate. This isn't even wood. This all has to go.
Even
this makes no sense.
Even that burl look?
Yeah, it's not even.
A laminate?
It's not even. No point in keeping that. So this is how it turned out. And they tore it all out, built in. Brand new. And again, this is something we do a lot of. It's just it's a makeover, you know, nice makeover for existing homes, which they already have nice homes in the first place. So, all right, this is a fun client of mine. We just we've done his whole house. We just keep finding new projects to do. So this is his lower level and very low ceiling. And it's kind of like a cold room. It just didn't have a whole lot of personality, and I wanted him to be able to go down there and use it. So this is how that turned out.
Now that's a man cave there.
I know, and he's a single guy. So that would be all your stacked stone. On the back wall, we put in a room for the sump pump so we could have access to that in case it had water issues. Fireplace, we covered that in stacked stone. New flooring, which is LVT tile, which is very, very popular right now. So it's a luxury vinyl tile. People are using that more and more.
I love that stuff myself.
Easy to clean, has the wood look, any kind of wood you could want. So in a basement, that works out great. And then we did the furniture, lighting.
Except for your one customer who couldn't figure out what flooring she wanted.
Oh, then she almost threw that in the mix, and I thought, oh, no, this is a whole nother baby. But so we did a drop ceiling, and we finished off this soffit. You can see that. We dropped
looks
that
really
in,
out,
and we
yeah.
finished that off.
World of difference.
Yeah, so now it looks intentional. And here's the last thing. This is a very interesting. This is a client that I did, and I did it twice. And so the first time I did it was in 2012, and the second time was in 2021. This is the first. This is 2012. So, I mean, it's a beautiful remodel. We did everything in it, new floor, new window treatments. We brought this wall up here. It was very short, so we brought it up to, I think, 4 feet high so we could put the, it could actually put a sofa in front of it because previously there was no wall, so there was no back for this. I don't have this before picture anymore. I don't know where it is, but we did, it's very traditional. Second remodel, same room.
Oh.
It's not as bright as a different photographer, but you can see it's a completely different concept. So they wanted something light, airy, fresh, different view.
Yeah.
So you can see that. I mean,
there's some beautiful pictures. There's some beautiful work you're doing.
Yeah, this was, I mean, you can see we redid a lot in this room. We took down the window treatments. They didn't like those anymore. They just really wanted to open it up because the style, it was really, really heavy. And now a lot of people just are doing some different looks. So, and then we did the sunroom, which is straight back here, which was pretty much uninhabitable before. They couldn't even be in the sunroom because it got to be like 90 degrees in there most of the time. So we decided to use a film which would keep out about 90% of the heat and the light so it was much more livable.
Oh, okay.
And so we created a sunroom for them. And this is the corner of the sunroom, and this is with the tinted ceiling.
Oh, look at the cute doggy.
The cute dog. And window treatments, and then I think that's their existing flooring. That was fine, but they wanted new window treatments and new furniture and all that kind of stuff. And this is the view of the sunroom, and this has had like 30,000 hits on Houzz. So 30,000 people have picked this in their own searches. But this is, you can see, I think you can see the UV tinting on the windows,
yes.
Just which made it totally livable.
I can see by the reflections.
Mm-hmm. And there's a TV in the room, and that they really hang out in there now and really live in that room.
Yeah, so, now they can use it.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that I put in there that was interesting are swivel chairs. So they can swivel,
that's a great idea.
This way, or they could flip around and they could face that way.
Yeah.
So that is pretty much everything that I've got.
Well, that is, you got some really beautiful work there. And, I know we got a lot more information that we could also talk about processes, how to go about, what to do, what's the first step. But
right.
Maybe I could talk you into coming back and doing another one of these later in the spring.
Oh, I'd love that.
Oh, that'd be great because there's still a ton more great information that you have here that people really do need. And I'm going to ask, I'll ask you after the fact so I don't put you on the spot, but I would love to blog some of this stuff that you've done in your name.
Oh, that'd be great. I would like that.
So we'll talk about that after the fact.
All right.
Well, folks, hey, give them your information again. I know you've already did it, but if you could just go all the way back to the beginning, that way, in case they didn't get a chance to write it down or copy it, that you give them another chance.
Name? Here's our slogan. Great design, we don't just dream it, we do it.
Right.
Any dreams that clients have, we will do. So,
yeah.
Again, it's JML Interior Design. My name is Jeannie Lashmet. I am a registered interior designer and then NCIDQ certified. Our office is at 11622 Page Service Drive, and that is in that KDR design complex. Mm-hmm. And my email address is Jeannie, J-E-A-N-N-E, at jmlinteriors.net, 314-435-4233.
That is awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And like I said, I got a ton more questions, but we're just running out of time for
sure.
This show, but definitely got to have you come back.
Okay.
And we're going to blast this because this is so, people need to know you're out there. And now that people know that they can contact you, that's not necessarily in our region, that outside, you know, and for technical questions and consulting and such, and that you're available because you're not like the others.
No.
You know, that's why I said at the beginning, the cream of the crop, not the fish upside down kind of contractor.
You know? No, not at all.
Well, thank you folks for watching our show. And hey, check out our construction consumer advocacy and out there. You can find it, Google it, find out a lot more information. I'm going to be putting her, you've already seen me put her in a bad spot here and guilted her into doing some blogs for us. But I'm going to do some of this information off of this right here and make some blogs. And so you can continue to learn because, folks, it's important to do it right and do it right the first time. Thank you, Jeannie.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Joey, thank you for being our producer. He does a great job. I always try to throw in that. He usually edits it out, but I wish he wouldn't because he does great work, and everybody needs to get to know him too. Well, thank you, folks. This is Troy Galloway on About the House, and we thank you. God bless you all.
Sponsored by Troy Galloway and Galloway Building Services, GallowayBuildingServices.com.